Hello.
I got my fruit punch and my jelly beans. I'm ready to play.
All right. That sounds delicious. No whammies, no whammies, no whammies.
Don't eat the jelly beans, though. That's what we're betting on.
Don't eat the jelly beans. I know what that was a reference to.
I was hoping so. You're starting to make me feel like I watched the wrong episode. Like, oh shit.
Yeah. Boxy and his jelly beans.
Yes, sir. This is the first episode we've recorded in a little while, right? It's been about a month, it looks
It's
like.
been about a month. I've been doing a lot of trips.
Yeah.
I think we were due last week, and then I went to Albuquerque. So, yeah, I've been
Yeah.
away a long time.
And you're in Baltimore. Unfortunately, I was not.
Yeah.
We've talked about that a lot on regular Geek Brunch and Mike's Weekly Reads already. So I've heard you talk about it on there. This is episode 75.
Yeah,
Look at
it's like
that.
three quarters.
Three quarters of a dollar.
That's right. Didn't have a long period in comics where comics were 75 cents. That was a short period.
Yeah, that wasn't a long period of time.
And then they jumped to like a dollar. Or did they go to 95 cents? I think they went to a dollar after
Think
that.
they were just a flat dollar, yeah.
It was like
Oh.
six, it was like 60. 60 cents lasted a long time. And then it went to 65 cents. And then for a short period, it went to 75 cents. And then it jumped to a dollar. That's a big fucking jump.
Yeah, I
And then
don't
a
think they
dollar and
got
a
into.
quarter.
They didn't really get into the 99 cent, like the dot 99,
No, they
until
didn't.
did they?
They had
I don't
like
really
un
remember
they
comics
mark.
being $1.99 for that long. Or
Yeah, a
were they
dollar
ever a dollar
a
ninety nine?
dollar and a quarter
They were
was
a
a
dollar and a quarter, $1.50, $1.75. I don't remember $1.99. I know.
Did it hit $1.75?
I don't know if that just
I thought it
jumped.
jumped to a 195.
Yeah, probably.
And then 225, 250, 299, and then 399. Jesus Christ. I mean, there was a 350, but the 350 was like for independence. I don't think there were too many 350s.
Yeah, you still. They didn't actually, as an industry, kind of go to 350. It just they went 299 to 399, and then that gave you the option of 350 if you wanted to be a little cheaper. Like, you still see some image books come out 350 sometimes,
Yeah.
but yeah, it's interesting that it wasn't until comics got to be several dollars in price that they busted out the old 99 cent trick to make it seem cheaper.
I forgot the 75 cents. Well, we did talk about that. There was a 75 era. It just didn't
Yeah.
last long.
That's what started this whole discussion, I think.
Yeah. 75 cent comics.
Yeah.
So
You
you
can
could
still
go to
get
like
comics that
Kohl's.
cheap, but not ones that have 75 cents on the cover.
Yeah, I guess it did last. Well, it went to 75 to a dollar, then a dollar and a quarter. I'm just looking at Batman in general to see the general trend, 'cause Batman's always been there.
That's the funny thing is if nowadays if you buy a comic for 75 cents, it's most likely going to cost more than like the cover price is most likely going to be more than 75 cents because it's probably going to be a comic from the 80s or 90s.
Yeah.
But if it's actually got a cover price of 75 cents, it's probably going to cost you more.
Yeah, inflation. I do like that DC. I mean, I know I'm a bias towards DC, but I do like that they went to a 299 price point. I mean, that makes things easier. And they
Yeah, I
did
think it
hold the
was a good
line at
move for them.
299 for a while. Yeah, I think it was a good move. Back when they did it, I didn't think it was. Like I would have argued against it if I was looking at the industry trend. Do you know what I mean?
You mean the when they did the holding the line, or you mean recently when they
No,
decided to go cheaper?
recently with Rebirth. If I was looking at dollar numbers and I was like a corporate guy, I would have said the industry's here. Why would we do this? And then I would look at the history, like when Marvel tried to lower their price, they tried to come out with like Untold Tales of Spider-Man and a couple other things at 99 cents and the Avengers Unplugged and all that stuff. It didn't work. Nobody bought into it.
Yeah, I think if you're gonna have to do it, it's gotta be your main books. And I think with DC, it was because they were,
They were
I think it was a good
smart.
move for them because they were of the two, they were the underdog, versus Marvel. And so, if you're only a dollar cheaper, but the amount of goodwill that that's going to buy you, if you can increase your market share enough, then you can make more money at $3 a book than at $4 if more people buy them,
Well, that was an interesting strategy.
So.
I wouldn't have went with the 3.99 because I would have lost dollar share, but they made up for that in the
Right.
quantities that they sold.
Yeah.
So it's like a game you play, It's like what's going to win out. But I think they went with if we go with a lower price point and we put out books that sell well, like they went with a different strategy than New 52 because New 52 you had I, Vampire and all kinds of strange titles like
Yeah,
Men
I
of
was just thinking
War and
about
all
that.
that. And this time they said, well, let's do twice monthly. And let's do all the big heroes. Let's not do very many obscure stuff. Do you know what I mean? We'll put
Right.
out Wonder Woman. We'll put out Titans. We'll put out what people buy. And it was a very
Right.
interesting strategy.
Yeah, they kind of took the opposite approach with I was just thinking about that because I was thinking about Resurrection Man for some reason. And I thought, what an odd title to try out, but that was sort of what they were doing with the New 52. They took sort of the opposite approach, and they definitely, I think, because they ended up canceling a lot of those titles. I mean, it's unfortunate because you and I, we both appreciate the
The
weird
obscured
stuff, and we
stuff,
like
yeah.
them trying stuff like that. We like to have a mix, but financially, I think it was a wiser move to go with the way that they did with Rebirth by. Yeah, by consolidating on the stuff that they know is going to sell well, and instead of, double shipping books that I know are going to sell well, instead of, putting out 2 issues of Batman instead of 1 issue of Batman and
Yeah.
1 issue of Stormwatch or something,
It even works
So.
well with like lower end titles in the aspect that on the titles like Deathstroke and stuff, I think people will jump off sooner. So like if you get them committed to at least 4 issues immediately instead of two, you've told more of your story. Do you know what I mean? Like Cyborg, why is that twice? And why is Deathstroke twice? It's kind of odd, but from another standpoint, it kind of makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, when Cyborg's the character that they are still trying to get momentum going with and wanting to push out there because he's a part of the movie and he's a part of the Justice League and they want to do a solo movie with him and stuff, so they want to increase his visibility in the market.
Yeah.
Deathstroke looks like he's going to be in Batman, and I mean he's a character that does have a fan base, and he's sort of that badass character that people will buy, but I think that is part of it, what you're saying. Like if you can get the story moving along as well, and people get invested a little quicker, maybe. It's easy to forget about stuff too. I mean, there's so many comics that come out. It's easy to forget sometimes. You buy a number one, you try it out, and you might like it, but you might forget about it by the next time, especially if you're like a week to week buyer.
Yeah, I have that problem with obscure stuff. I don't have that problem with mainstream because I buy it all. So it's like circle the box. I don't usually miss it. But like if it's some like Blue Juice comics or some obscure thing, like Jet City Comics, I tend to forget what I ordered. So I get lost and I forget and then I have like one, three, and that's it. Like, and then it's like impossible to find. Because you can go to my comic shop, they don't have it. Sometimes you'll be lucky enough to find it on eBay, but they're not, some of those titles aren't hot books.
Right.
Yeah, so you're shit out of luck. But
Yeah, you have to find a retailer that picked it up and that actually got enough copies that they didn't
yeah.
just sell them right away to whoever was on had it on their pull list.
Yeah, you know, it's been like one of my pet peeves lately is, and I know I'm getting a lot of them in my old age, but, and they're mostly against people griping, but I don't like when fans try to tell a company how to run their company. It bothers me, and I don't know why it does. Because we as fans, we know what we like. But we don't know all the facts of how the business is running, what numbers they're seeing, like before we see these numbers that are in previews. Do you know what I mean? So it's like a lot of people saying, this is what I want, this is what everybody wants, and that's not necessarily true.
No.
You know, it just I'm seeing that a lot with Valiant now. It's like everybody wants them to do a certain thing. But I'm like, fuck those guys. Let them run their business. I mean, Dinesh and company, he was one of us. He was one of those hardcore fans. And now he's on the other side. I mean, he's still very accessible for a CEO to talk to a fan. That's pretty amazing. That's like, that doesn't usually happen, but he'll answer your tweets, he'll answer your questions and all this stuff. But at the same time, he's a fan that loved it so much that he bought into that, that property. He bought the rights to that property, and now he's got to try to shift the paradigm. And he's like, I got to keep my company afloat. What do I need to do? And all there's a lot of times, I'm sure, when you're on the other side of the fence, you see things that you didn't see as a fan. Like, you see like trends. I mean, what you see in comic industry a lot is like Marvel follows DC, DC follows Marvel. They see like trends, just like movies. If there's a space movie coming out of Mars, you usually see two studios release a space movie about Mars, right? And it's whoever makes the better one. Just like Tombstone and Wyatt Earp, they came roughly around the same time. One movie is like really, really good, at least I think for the general populace, because of like Val Kilmer's performance and some of that. But that was a hit while the other one wasn't. The Kevin Costner version or whatever it was. So like, yeah, that's interesting. I mean, but until you're on the other side and you're running it as a business, I think things change.
Yeah, and if you do continue to run your business as a fan, it's even true for comic shops too, not just comic book companies.
Oh my
If
God,
you run it as a fan, you'll go out of business fast.
I'm glad you said that, because that's what I believe, because you start catering to what you like and not what the trends are. Whereas you have, like, if you're a comic shop, the hardest thing for me as a comic shop owner would be, I know what I like and I know what I want, but now I'm on the other side. Like, I'm no longer buying these back issues for my enjoyment. I'm buying them to turn a profit. I'm like saying, oh, I can buy this for 20, I could sell it for 40, kind of thing. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's game changing. And I've seen this happen to comic shop owners where they're like, they're fans at heart, but when they change and they're on the other side of the register, their philosophies change. And I think you have to.
It has to. Yeah, or you'll probably go out of business pretty quick. I mean, it's a lot of times, sometimes you have people tell you like, don't, if you love something, make it your hobby. Don't make it your job, because you'll get sick of it,
I don't think I would because
No, and that's not true for everybody,
yeah,
but.
if the hobby, like, I like it so much. And I like I sometimes go to the comic shop. I really love to do this. And like stay there for an hour and just watch customers and stuff, watch things from the other perspective, not from a fan perspective, but what is he selling? What are fans excited about? It's very fascinating because what they're excited about isn't necessarily what you're excited about.
Sure.
And that's what's amazing about the medium. And then when people like say, well, this isn't that, like it's not, yeah, you might not like it. I understand that totally, but your decision to do something might not be the right one, depending on the market.
Yeah, people armchair quarterback the industry, and they don't look at it from the perspective, they're looking at it from the perspective of fan or what they want, And I mean, that's a certain amount of immaturity as a person. Like, if you think what you want is what everybody else wants, then I mean, that's not just your comic book fandom. That's a little bit of immaturity from as a person, that you can't see things from other people's perspective,
Well, Valiant, it's easy for me to see that because it's such a small publisher, like nine titles, eight, nine titles. And like what I love, like Imperium, Joshua Dysart. Like what I absolutely love, like this comic gives me a half hour of a read because I get so engrossed in it. And that's exceptional for a comic these days, right? A half
Yeah,
hour.
definitely.
And then to be able to think about it for another 2 or 3 hours. Just think about, digest what you just read, That's like value. But when you look at the sales numbers, not everybody wants that. Right? I mean, it's the lowest selling Valiant title, but it's my favorite. So what does that say? It says that
And you
I'm not the person to talk to about how things run, because what I get out of something, there are fans that don't want to be bogged down by words. It's weird. Like I hear people make comments that, oh, this had too much dialogue. Or, I mean, yeah, I understand that a comic is a balance between dialogue and comic, but did it stop you from enjoying it? I mean, sometimes there's a lot of dialogue, like in a Bendis book, there's a lot of dialogue, but there's a lot of depth in that dialogue, whether you like it or not. I mean, it sometimes a normal conversation is amazing.
Yeah, I've had to realize that my tastes, I do like modern comics, but I've had to realize that my tastes do skewer more towards what the style of comics that introduced me to comics. And I think
Oh,
that has I think a lot of that has to do with how impressionable you are as a young person. And I have to think, well, there are people out reading comics now. They didn't read comics from the 80s when they were kids, So
yeah.
they're not going to be as familiar with it. When I read a comic from that era, it just hits a sweet spot for me, and there's a part of me emotionally that feels like that's the right way to do a comic.
Yeah, it's like getting wrapped up in a secure blanket, like a blanket. Like you, it brings back memories of where you were and what joy it brought you at that time. And
Yeah,
it's
and
that era. You were so engrossed in it that nothing, that story mattered to you. So that time period in comics matters to you a lot.
yeah, even that, and even goes beyond that to where I feel accustomed to the amount of story I'm getting
Oh yeah,
at
that
that time period. So there's a part of me that's never going to be completely comfortable, I think, with how comics have become a lot less dense. you
Oh
know,
yeah,
and I don't get as much story from them because there's a lot more splash pages and there's a lot less panels per page. And
that's why I was
but
surprised by like Superwoman, because they
Superwoman, I know. Yeah.
Superwoman felt like a
Felt like
comic of the past.
yeah, definitely.
It was so dense and had like multiple story plots, like of the era that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of story. You're like, is this a book from now? You're like, I gotta look at you to do a double take because it's so dense.
Yeah, and I loved it for that reason, and I knew that's why I was loving it. And that's not, I mean, I have a amount of self-awareness that I can go, I'm not going to go rage on the internet that like all the other comics suck nowadays and this is what they all should be like, 'cause I know it's a throwback to an older style. It's not going to appeal to everyone and I'm not going to expect it to, you know. But so I'm aware of why I like it. It doesn't make me like it less. I just But it helps me understand, you know, not everyone's going to be coming from where I'm coming from.
Right. Another book like that today is Deathstroke. That book is dense, and in my mind, like, it's not my favorite because of all the time jumps, but Priest is known for that. Like, he's done it at Quantum of Woody, he's done it at Black Panther. He just does it all the time. But it's so much that it distracts me. But if you go back and like, I was listening to another podcast, another DC podcast, and they made a good point is, sometimes he reads a page or 2 pages and then he has to go back and make sure he's in the right time frame. And that could be like a good thing or that could be a distracting thing, because you're like, okay, I got to make sure I understand the puzzle, right? But that's another book that feels very different. Like, it is dense. It's going through like 4 different time frames in Deathstroke's history. And not, that's another dense book. And then there's books like Detective, which I heard you got spoiled. I felt bad. I didn't want to get so spoiled in that I chose, I knew what was going to happen, and I chose to stay off the internet for like 2 days before I could read it, because I was very, very worried that I wouldn't experience it. But that one is not dense, but it's one of those things that you might want to read 2 or 3 times because it's so damn good.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's dense, but it's also it's not on the extreme other side where I put it down and feel like it was a waste of money. And it's not just because it's good and there's fun stuff that happens. Like there's a lot of books that sort of strike a balance, you know. They're paced pretty well. You feel like you get a good amount of story, and yeah, it might not be as dense as a book from the 80s, but it's a decent read, you know.
And more importantly, it gives you something that you I mean, comics have to do this, especially not in trade format, but especially if you're reading it every month, is they have to give you a reason to come back. Like, there has to be that soap opera thing, right? I mean, if they don't give you anything in the story that you want to come back for, then why come back? Unless you're there for history, which is one of my things. I want to like know it all. I want to know the bad, I want to know the good, I want to know every the mediocre. But
Yeah, if you're just
I'm an
obsessed with the
exception,
universe.
yeah. I'm an exception to the rule. But it has to give you some reason to come back.
Yeah, it's a serial. I mean, it's a, especially at a superhero Marvel and DC level, it's serialized storytelling. It's like TV, you know. Each installment, like you might want to paint a bigger picture over multiple episodes, but ultimately, each installment has to have a hook because people have so many other options for entertainment. They can, you got to keep them engaged.
Right. Yep.
So,
So
'cause people can easily
that was a
drop it.
long discussion about 75 cents.
Yeah.
But the inflation of comic books has gone up, because of profits and because they're paying decent wages to the people that are putting their writing and art into these books.
Yeah, a lot of other stuff has escalated as well. You know, it's kind of gone along with the economy, but it has increased exponentially.
Yeah. So, we had a few questions. I thought we would tackle those first
Sure.
and then go from there. So let me just find my way through all this clutter on my page. We had a question from Timmy Thum, Tim Terrell. Tim is a friend of mine. He's very vocal of, like, he did a podcast called Thum, and he was like, he did commentary, especially on like older comics and trends at the time. He doesn't do it anymore, but I enjoyed him for that, and he's very vocal on the Facebook pages on his opinion. It's so weird though when you meet him in person because he's very quiet and different. He's one of those guys that's different, in real life. And we met him at San Diego, and he has a question for us. And he says, "I was reading the latest Action Comics. Superman is still trying to save the Clark Kent identity." He says, "Do you think it's still needed in the Superman mythos?" I'll let you take that one.
That is a good, it's a good question. It, I think so. I think it's so tied into the Superman mythos
Yeah, to me it's like
that it'd
Peter
be hard for them.
Parker, Bruce Wayne, Bruce Banner. It's part of it. And whether it changes or not, like, you get a new Batman every now and then, it'll always go back.
Yes. So I think there's always going to be that expectation from fans that it's included. I mean, I guess you could ask, I guess the another way you could ask a question is that could Superman just be Kal-El and just be open about the fact that he's from Krypton and be able to live his life peacefully that way? I mean, in this day and age, no, I don't think we're there.
Because the
Again,
military and superpowers countries wouldn't allow that to happen.
yeah, I don't think he could live in peace. I mean, you look at the way people that are different in this country are still being treated.
Yeah.
It might make for an interesting storyline, you know, but I think if you're asking, is it necessary from the like if you're imagining someone actually in that sort of situation trying to live a life in this world, I think it's still necessary for him. It would still be necessary. I think from if it was me, I would still feel it necessary to have a alter ego to, I mean,
I
because
think,
essentially he's pretending, right? He's pretending to be a human. He's pretending to fit in so he doesn't have to deal with all the problems it would create.
he's kind
I
of
mean,
unique though because he was raised as a human. It's different from his perspective than it is from Supergirl's perspective, because Supergirl landed at an older age where he was still a child, and then raised as a Earthling.
Yeah, that's true. That's part of it. And a lot of times the need for an alter ego is to protect those that are close to them, you know.
Exactly, because if somebody you don't like finds out, how are they gonna hurt you? They're not gonna hurt you if you're invulnerable. They're gonna hurt you where it hurts the most, by hurting your family and those you care about.
Yeah, I think the more powerful you are, the more that that's true.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Superman is a lot more invulnerable, so it'd be easier for someone to get back at him. There's more of a contrast between going after him and going after somebody that he's close to, that's just a regular human, you know, than someone that's maybe less powerful. So yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons it's not outdated for him
The
to
only
have it.
thing that I think is outdated and they have to change from time to time for any heroes is the technology. Like right now, you know, for Peter Parker and Clark Kent and those that are in reporting, it's changed so dramatically.
Oh, yeah.
Like the newspaper used to be a big deal, like a big deal, and now it's more like what you see online, you know.
Right. Yeah, that'd
Reporting has
be.
even changed because of the technology. Like, think, you know, people there are more amateur people reporting on things because they can blog it, they can discuss it on Twitter, they could put it on Facebook, they could do so much. Back then, you would have to go put your write up your article and then print it somewhere and then get somebody to put your publication out.
Yeah, it really has. You could probably do a whole podcast just talking about all the different characters in comics that worked for newspapers and how much that was because it was a popular thing. And it also connects to, you know, writing. A lot of times writers make characters that they're writing about writers
Yeah,
because that's what they know.
but they've been like you'll like notice like subtle things that artists do that or writers do that don't make a hell of a lot of sense in today's technology. Like there was a panel in Supergirl and she's dealing with technology change because she comes from Krypton, which is far advanced, and then she's got to go to school where it's this. And she has an overhead projector. Like, you don't usually see overhead projectors anymore. I mean, I haven't seen one in at least 10 years because they'll just put the software, oh, email it to me. Okay, I'm gonna bring it up on the computer. And the computer's attached to the overhead screen and you can see it.
Right, yeah.
But I have never seen like that projector in forever. But
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. I sort of hadn't It sort of coincided. Well, I was gonna say, I mean, I would still see them at my undergrad, but I did see the way that technology had changed in universities, because when I went back to grad school, they were gone. Yeah, it was what you said. You just saw they always just brought their laptop and hooked it in.
Yeah. Well, in my college days, everything, you'd have to go get your presentation converted to the overhead projector, plastic, whatever they called them back in there, and then put your presentation up on the screen.
Yeah.
But now it's, you know, save as a send me the file and we'll project it kind of thing.
Well, you did things the hard way because you guys still had like abacuses and stuff, right?
Yeah, that's
When you were
right.
in school. But yeah, I mean, you've seen different ways of them trying to modernize that, and I mean, obviously, newspapers still exist, but so it ends up being a kind of a part of the storyline that they don't have the funds that they used to, or you have different characters that are now like bring in Linda Park back in Titans. You know, she's working for just this blog that nobody's heard of, you know, and things like that. But yeah, that's kind of interesting phenomenon. Or Peter Parker, you know, he doesn't even do that anymore, you know. So,
They've kind of aged him.
yeah. So a lot has changed.
So next question is from Martin. He asks, I just finished BSG 1978 and loved it. What are you guys going to discuss next?
I don't know, Martin. Just because you finished it doesn't mean we're anywhere near to
Near
discussing it, finishing it. We do
enough.
one episode a month lately. Two
Yeah.
if we're lucky, so who knows? We're
I think
on
I should we
episode six.
think you should pick the next series though, because I we kind of did Buck Rogers and now BSG 1978. I think whatever we queue up should be something that you think about. I mean, I have a lot that I want to do. They're all series that I've watched. Like, I've got my Wonder Woman DVDs, my $6 Million Man. I can go through all of those. I want to revisit The Flash, you know, like the first series, the Wesley Snipes Flash series. 'Cause that one I
Wesley
liked.
Snipes, I don't remember that
Wesley
Flash series.
Snipes. God, what's that guy's name?
Isn't it Ship, Wesley
Ship.
Ship?
Wesley
Yeah.
Ship. Blade.
I want to see a Wesley Snipes Flash. That'd be pretty interesting. Be like New Jack City combined with Central City, like John Wesley's Ship.
Ship.
Yeah, I actually I would I have that DVD collection, and
Yeah.
I've been but I still haven't rewatched it from when I was a kid, and that was interesting to me. I wonder if that's what sort of partially influenced me to like The Flash so much as an adult, because even though I wasn't a DC Comics fan, we watched The Flash because there weren't a lot of it was happened to be a comic book show on TV, you know,
Yeah.
and it was pretty close to Batman 89's, and we had watched that and I liked it.
I got so into it. Man, I was so into it that I recorded it on VHS and had every episode. And there was a
Nice.
couple of them where there were presidential debates and they never aired and stuff like that. I'm like, it drive me crazy. I was like, no. I'm gonna have a Captain Cold or a Mirror Master. I think David Cassidy was the cast as the Mirror Master, and Mark Hamill was the Trickster. I can't remember who Captain Cold was.
Yeah, Mark Han I remember Mark Hamill being the trickster.
And they've reused the thing that's kind of the kind of cool, at least from an old person's perspective, on the new Flash is they have the Flash that was in that TV show as Jay Garrick. You know,
Yeah.
as
Well, and they
Flash's
had
dad, add Flash's dad.
right. And they had
So,
Mark Hamill back.
yeah, and they had
So they
Mark
have
Hamill
kind
back
of.
and Tina McGee. Tina McGee has been there. She was the main scientist in the original show. So she's been in several episodes of the new Flash. So that's like three of them, right? I mean, three of them right there. So it's been really, really cool. Cool to see that from a retro perspective.
Yeah, definitely. But so yeah, we'll see. It'll be a little while.
I have the Incredible Hulk DVDs. Rob votes for the A team. Do-do-do-do.
We'd keep seeing Starbuck.
Yeah, that's right.
We'd have that connection. We'd
All right,
be
so those are the questions on Facebook, and then we had a couple on Twitter from Ross. I gotta find him. He said, Moon Knight's one of his favorites, and he's heard many times that he's just Marvel ripping off Batman. And he says, not my view, but what are your thoughts? That is very interesting because one of my books is Moon Knight related. But what are your thoughts?
I've never thought that that criticism had that much teeth, you know.
I never thought it had merit because to me, they're
No.
not even close.
Not really. I
I mean, you
mean,
could say that he had money. I mean, he had money. You could say that he has his own Alfred with Frenchie. But what else is there? And plus, he's got that multiple personality thing going on.
Was that there in the early on, or
No,
was that like a later
he
thing?
was a mercenary.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's kind of a later addition, but even without that, I don't know. I mean, you could. I think if you're gonna say one superhero is a copy of another, they have to be pretty darn close because there's so many that are similar to each other. You know, it's
Yeah.
like if Moon Knight has some things in common with Batman, well, so many other vigilantes have things in common with them. And so it's not all that remarkable. It's almost like well, yeah, maybe they do have a little bit in common, but what's the big deal? 'Cause so does A and B and C and D and E and F and
Yeah.
so it's never really struck me as that big of a deal, or that remarkable that they have a few things in common.
Yeah.
And I don't really, but yeah, I don't know. I don't see any like strong indication that Marvel was really trying to create a Batman character with Moon Knight.
Yeah, I can't see that correlation
So,
at all, and I'm talking about the first appearance today of Werewolf by
yeah.
Night. So if you see his original stuff, I mean there's stuff in this is the first time I've read Werewolf by Night 32, even though I've owned it for I think 2 years. So there was some things in there that surprised me, and we'll talk about that later. But initially, for sure, there's no correlation. There might be like some grim stuff later, and plus he's got like this god thing going on in later where he gets the god of from Egypt, Khonsu, or how do you pronounce it?
Khushu, maybe.
Khonsu,
I don't know.
you're closer. You're a librarian. You
Yeah.
have you have the librarian skills.
Limit knowledge, random knowledge of knowing a little bit about a lot of things.
An archivist.
Oh,
Yeah.
right. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I did in grad school. I dug in the pyramids. That would have been a lot more interesting. I wish that's what I
You might have discovered something. And that's
did. Yeah.
interesting too, because that's got another with another book I read this week, The Pyramids. So
Yeah,
that
she
was
has
that.
pyramids and something I read too.
Yeah, interesting. So there's two. So the other question Ross has is, here's another retro question. What are your favorite pulp superhero? Do you have one?
Well, any knowledge of pulp heroes is going to be retroactive for me, But,
Same for me.
so yeah, I mean, I've read occasionally here and there, not anytime recently. I've read some stuff from Dynamite when they've done newer stuff, and well, I guess it probably had to be the Shadow just because of the way that the Shadow was influential to later characters that I like street level superheroes
Yeah.
tend to have more in common with the pulp heroes and Batman, obviously. And I do like the way that the Shadow is has a sort of darkness about him, and this kind of he almost he almost I almost find the believability of his of him striking fear into the hearts of criminals more believable than these days than I do Batman.
Yeah.
You know,
Well,
'cause
he
something
is
about him
creepy,
just,
and his voice
yeah.
is so weird, and he's got that like mysticism about him. You know,
Yeah.
there's like some weird power that he has over. Plus, like he has that ring that can do things to people, and
Yeah.
plus he's in an era that I find like a time period that I actually find fascinating. But I'm agreeing with you. Shadow is my favorite, but I will name a female one that I've really grown fond of, and I just recently purchased some hardcovers of her Golden Age adventures, and I've even had a commission done of her, and that's Miss Fury. I becoming a real big fan of her character, and Dynamite did get me started on both of them, even though for DC, my legacy with DC, I had the Shadow back in the day, not the original series, even though I just completed the original DC series, but I would get the Shadow that was in the 80s, and
Yeah, was that Denny O'Neill
Denny
one?
O'Neil, yeah, I think, and then there was also a Doc Savage, and the similarities between them are interesting because the Shadow has all these like agents that work for him. It's weird. Like he's got all these like street level dudes that'll do anything for him. And then if you look at Doc Savage, it's very, very similar. Like Doc Savage has all these supporting cast members that like work with him. And then you'll even get into the Avenger in Pulp. He's not as well known, but I know him from DC and then read him in Dynamite. And I absolutely love the Avenger, which was called Justice when he had his D Justice Inc. And then DC, I don't know, maybe it was about almost 10 years ago, had that Pulp line. That was pretty fascinating. The first wave,
Oh, yeah.
really really enjoyed that. And it was one of the first series, one of the first comic books. Like Doc Savage was fascinating in the fact that they didn't release the last issue. You had to go digital to get it. So
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
that was one of the ones they didn't print. They didn't put to print. So like my Docs, I have every issue of Doc Savage, and I do have like the Doc Savage magazines, you know, and I have a lot of Doc Savage, but the Shadow I absolutely love. And if you are a Shadow fan, and you want that, you need to check out that Garth Ennis, and then like the writers that came after him on Dynamite in that first arc. Oh my God, it's awesome. It is so good. And I even own some pages from it because I loved it so much. And I don't usually buy comic pages. So, Shadow.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I read all of what Garth Ennis wrote, and then I think I read some of the other stuff. I can't remember. But yeah, that stuff was good.
Yeah, I enjoy it so much. There was the Howard Chaykin Shadow too before they did the Helfer and Sienkiewicz, and then they had the Shadow Strikes, and then Dynamite got it, and Dynamite's had it since.
Yeah, and they've done some collections of the older stuff, I think.
Yeah. Dynamite does the Pulp really well. Like people make fun of Dynamite a lot, but it's really well done.
Yeah, they do well with that. It is funny though, sometimes I look through previews and it's almost like there isn't a license under the sun that they won't try to make a comic out of.
Yeah.
So like really, sometimes I look, I think, really? Somebody's gonna buy that?
But they target
Maybe
it,
they
like
will, but
they look at genres that I don't know how they're an interesting company. I don't know how they stay afloat. I know that some of the stuff they do is on the fringe. Like they can do like Tarzan but not call it Tarzan. Do you know what I mean? He's another pulp hero that I would say that I enjoy a lot. And it's also got the DC connection and a Marvel connection.
Yeah, well, both of them used to do licensed properties a lot more than they do nowadays.
Yeah, and
Because they're
Dynamite's
all.
doing now with Lord of the Jungle and Lords of the Jungle and stuff like that. So I think they find out what they can do. They must have some good lawyers and say we could do this if we don't title it Tarzan because this falls into the open. I always want to say open source because I'm a software guy, but it's public domain.
Right, yeah.
Same,
FOSS.
kind
Free office.
similar idea though.
Yeah. So the well, maybe there might be one more question, but I'm not sure. Let me check to make sure we got them all. Da 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 da.
I got
Yeah, that's those are it.
almost the whole gang here with me right now. I got Dusty's on one side of me and Mabel's on the other side of me.
All
We're
right.
all we're on they're all podcasting.
They get
What
along
comps did
really
you guys
well
read?
now.
I don't know about really well, but they get along okay. As
Yeah.
long as she doesn't pester him too much. But they're divided by me right now. They're on opposite sides. So
We had a question a long time ago that was asked on the Facebook page by David Levine.
oh yeah,
And
good.
what we might as well get to it. It had to do with, like, he's switching from long boxes to drawer short boxes. And I highly recommend this, even if you're young right now. If you are young and you envision yourself to be collecting and not getting rid of your collection, you should switch to short. And here is why. Because eventually you get older and these boxes that are bagged and boarded become heavy. And I'm talking about, yeah, you can lift one or two, but when you have to do like 30 of them, you'll almost break your back. So do it now. Switch to the short boxes. 'Cause you'll thank me later. When you hit your 40s, you'll say, "Thank you, Mike. You saved my back."
Yeah. Well, you see, young man, there's these things called hernias.
Yes.
I never went the long box route. For
Very
whatever
smart.
reason, I never, they never looked like I would have space for them.
Well, they're not even closet friendly though, because
No,
like
yeah.
a regular closet isn't that deep, so it has to go
Right.
sideways. But
Yeah.
a drawer, like a small box, will go really nice in the closet.
Yeah, it fits perfectly usually in
Yeah.
most just normal closets. But yeah, I've pretty much always gone with short boxes. I have one long box that I got for free a couple weeks ago. It's like a used one and it's in my trunk.
Yeah.
Oh, what do you think about that, Mabel?
That's like Harley.
Yeah,
I
she's
record
tweaking.
for some reason when I record Mike M's Weekly Reads, which is my solo, that's when she wants to play. Like
Yeah.
it's a guaranteed. I sit on the chair, I'm by myself. She brings the squeaky toys to me.
Yeah, she does it sometimes. I'm on the phone too. Something about like me talking. She thinks, "Oh, they're making all that noise. They must be telling me to come over here with my toys."
And Harley's not a light dog. She's like 65 pounds. And she'll come like at a really good speed, like from across the living room into the kitchen and with a toy in her mouth and just collide into me. Like, here it is. Pow.
Yeah.
So I have to always be on my alert, you know? I can't like just be surprised. I have to always be on alert. Like, I know
Like you're
when she's sleeping, she's calm, but
yeah.
there's
Let's see.
sometimes when she gets that, we call them the crazy eyes. When she gets her pupil like will dilate. It's weird. It's not because of light change. You see her pupil dilate, and that means she wants to play, and she wants to
He's
play
going
hard.
crazy mode. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
It's
awesome.
like you're in the Justice League Detroit. You're just like, you know, Aquaman's lurking behind a rock or something. He's just any minute he could jump out, punch you in the face
That
just to prove a
Aquaman was
point.
aggressive during that time frame.
Yeah.
Very angry. Well, I guess he was in Peter David's too when he got the hook. Well, even back then when his son died, he left Mara and did his own thing. didn't even consider his wife. He just, or what she was going through losing a son. He just wanted revenge. He's always been an angry character.
Yeah. That's kind of funny. 'Cause it doesn't quite fit his reputation
Yeah.
sometimes.
So, did you want to talk BSG real quick?
Sure.
All right.
I forget what this episode was called. I can look it up, but it.
It was episode 6, but I don't remember what
Yeah.
it's called. But I'll say this right off bat before we get into it. Made me remember the Buck Rogers episode where he landed on that planet.
Oh, yeah.
Very similar, because it had the woman and the kid, and I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. It was kind of the first episode of the week kind of episode that we've had. The first five episodes all kind of chained together, told one big story, and this is the first one that kind of not totally isolated, but it was a little bit more of a episode of the week kind of adventure. The Lost Warrior is what it was called. And yeah, I focused on Apollo a lot more than other characters because he gets marooned on a planet.
95% of the screen time. I mean, episode time.
Pretty much focused on him because he's marooned on a planet, and like you said, there's a widow and her son that he becomes friends with, gets to know. His vehicle's out of fuel, and the reason that this happens because he kind of purposely led a bunch of Cylons away from Battlestar and their whole entourage, so they wouldn't find it. And he pretty soon gets to know or gets to find out that there's also a Cylon. They don't know it as a Cylon, but they call it Red Eye for obvious reasons. And it's very much kind of like they wanted to fit a Western story into, like they do sometimes with sci-fi. They find a way to kind of mix other genres in. It was very much kind of like the technology and culture on the planet was sort of Old West, like
Yeah.
they even have like a gunfight showdown in the street later on.
That Western thing happening.
Yeah, but
It even felt like a Western though from the little boy's perspective. Like you could picture this happening in a Western where there was a wolf and it was attacking the cattle. And the little boy felt, because he had no father, that it was his job to kill the wolf. And the mother's being overprotective because she's like, well, why is my son growing up too fast?
Apollo's trying to avoid conflict, but the widow, she has a brother and a cousin, and they're pretty just like almost like the little kid is. They're excited that Apollo has laser weaponry, and want him to use it on Red Eye, because Red Eye, the Cylon, he's pretty much surprisingly kind of obeying this man. He reminded me of Boss Hogg from Dukes of Hazzard, just like this sort of portly man with wearing all white. But he's kind of using the Cylon basically to be the top dog and make everyone else pay tribute to him. And Apollo can't figure out at first why the Cylon is just listening to this human. He doesn't believe it at first, and once he does believe it, he's not really sure what's going on. But basically it turns out that Red Eye was marooned there as well, and the other Cylons it was with were destroyed. And even though he wasn't destroyed, he had damage to his memory, so that he was basically mistook this guy as his leader. And that's why he was following him and listening to him.
And that guy kind of took advantage of everybody in the town.
Yeah. But it was my least favorite episode so far, but I thought it was still an enjoyable watch.
Yeah,
I
it didn't
liked it.
have. I missed all the tension and stuff on the Galactica and stuff. You know, it was
Yeah.
just there wasn't very much Starbuck and Boomer, other than they had the interesting card game, because
Yeah.
they felt that Apollo had promised Boxy like he'd be home by a certain time and they'd do stuff, and they didn't want to tell Boxy what was going on with their dad, so they had to distract him. So they, of course, Starbuck goes take puts him into a card game and teaches him cards, and
Yeah.
they do it with jelly beans instead of, you know, credits and stuff. And he's there smoking a stogie while he's there, or did
Right
he
next to
even
the
light
kid,
it?
yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, because Cassiopeia comes in and yells at them for teaching them cards and smoking the. Because at first I was like, man, they don't know about secondhand smoke in the future. But she does complain about the fact that he's smoking right next to the kid, and that was just probably some of the more entertaining. And I like that they did include those scenes because it was definitely good comic relief.
Yeah, it changed
Yeah.
the mood a little bit.
Yeah. Like one of the other pilots is like, he's about to complain about the having to drink fruit punch instead of beer. And it's like, and Starbuck looks at him like, don't start.
You will enjoy this fruit punch and shut up.
Yeah.
So he like has a huge smile on his face. It's delicious.
Yeah. And Starbucks just kind of absentmindedly while they're playing cards, he's focusing on his cards and he's like picking up and eating some jelly beans, and Boxy tells him, hey man, you're eating your bet. And he's like eating those jelly beans he's supposed to be playing with. So just silly stuff, but I thought it was funny. It
Yeah.
was entertaining.
And it's cool to see the loyalty, like they're willing to disobey orders and stuff to go help their friend.
Right, yeah,
And
because they decide to finally just to launch and go seek out Apollo, and Starbuck especially really sort of pushes it as far as how far they can get away from Battlestar to and would still have the chance to get back
well,
just to
I
try to
liked the
find
fact that he
Apollo.
told Boomer. I don't know if it was Boomer or if it was Adama, but he told one of them, you know, they lost Boxy lost his mother. He's not going to lose his father too. You know.
Yeah, because it was sort of interesting that they had Adama was hesitant to send people out to find him, and it wasn't because he doesn't care. He was just so he was being so extra careful about showing favor because
Yeah.
it was his son. He didn't want people to think that he was showing favoritism, but he was actually just kind of doing. It didn't really make sense because Starbuck pointed out to him, you would actually, it's not as if this isn't something you wouldn't do for other pilots. So you
Yeah.
don't have to worry about showing favoritism because you would do this for other pilots as well. So stop worrying about it, So it wasn't a bad episode, but we
I
kind of
liked
came off of.
the gun scene, the gunfight though, because it did have that Western, you know, theme, the draw, and the when he killed the Cylon, it was a big blast. I mean, that Cylon fell down hard.
Yeah. And it was kind of interesting the way that Apollo approached the whole situation by trying to avoid violence because he didn't want to escalate things. Because before he knew that the Cylon was memory damaged, he didn't want to show evidence that he was a fighter pilot,
Yeah, Colonial Warrior.
colonial warriors, and because he knew that things would escalate. So he was taking that precaution. He also was smart enough to appeal to the boss guy that was using the Cylon appeal to his vanity and say that he wanted to work for him and stuff, play along basically to try to get information.
He kind of reminded me of like Boss Hogg just sitting back, you know, like just
Yeah, that's what I just said, yeah.
yeah.
He definitely looked similar.
So, do you want to jump to comic books?
Sure.
All right.
Let's do it.
You want to go first or you want me to?
You can start us off.
Okay. I'll start off with my least favorite and work my way to my most favorite. So, I recently I'm getting close to completing Iron Man Volume 1. And
Nice.
I chose this book because it's the first Iron Man book that I realized his armor he they put him a nose on him.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the guys at the comic shop that works there for credit, he's an older guy, he's retired, and he was saying when this book came out, like this wasn't the it happened a few issues before that. And I think somebody told me that they talked about this in the Untold Legends of Marvel Comics. You know, it was a book that came out, and I think they have an audio version of the book that there's a slight mention of Iron Man having a nose. But he said it caused a lot of controversy in the during his time. So I said, oh, that's kind of interesting. But as far as a story, it wasn't really that good because it didn't like it was the middle it was like towards there's other context in this story that you won't get unless you read the previous issues, even though it does a recap page of what happens, and it opens up like any comic that during this Bronze Age time where they put you into an action scene and then they tell you, well, here's how we got there. And we'll see that in Werewolf by Night too. But the thing I enjoyed the most about this is Tony Stark had a facility in the Philippines, a Stark International plant, and he had Happy over there running his security area. And Happy is currently married to Pepper. So this is where it got really interesting to me. And Happy has known that Tony is Iron Man, but this is like the first time that he had told Pepper that he's Iron Man, but this is the first time that Tony ever brought the armor out in front of her and said, here's how it works. She says, well, like, how did you keep this from us? And he says, well, I carried this in my briefcase. And then so he it actually has like every single panel of him getting dressed, and it's crazy. It shows, okay, here I put on my chest plate, and I used to use this because I needed this to keep my heart going because of my heart problems. And then I put on the boots. And then he says, I have magnets on the boots that attract itself up to hook up to his crotch area. And so the yellow part comes up from his boot all the way up to his crotch and fills it in. He's got lead covering, and then the same thing happens when he puts on the glove. It goes over there, and I thought that part was pretty fascinating. And there's a huge explosion in this facility, and it's like a kind of like a gas leak, a rupture he has to fix. And then there's an organization here that I really didn't understand, and they have a weapon called Dragonfire. And it's like a missiles. And then I was lost because this one terrorist, he had a sister, and the sister like was in love with this other man. And it is interesting though, because it was an interracial couple thing happening. And this is what year is this? 1974. So I found that to be interesting from a historical perspective. And then it has Crimson Dynamo, who's really out to kill Iron Man and Tony for the death of Janice Cord. And it references Iron Man 22, which is a long time ago. And I haven't read Iron Man 22, so I don't know why he has this revenge or why he's seeking revenge. And then he's like really mad at Titanium Man, and I've always loved Titanium Man because he's like way bigger than Crimson Dynamo, and he's got that weird little LED thing across it, his green mask that makes it look like it's like a Cylon-ish thing that just changes shape. I just always have dug that. And it has Radioactive Man, and Radioactive Man was one of my favorites back in the day. And he's really angry at those two for some reason, because he blames them for that lady's death. And there's another lady there that worked at Stark International's. And then I got kind of confused on what was going on. But it's pretty much a battle between him and Crimson Dynamo. And then that Dragonfire guy gets involved. Because once him and Crimson Dynamo go at it, they launch the Dragonfire missiles at Iron Man. And he eventually escapes. When they launch the missiles, when Crimson Dynamo launches this weapon at him, it causes so much turmoil in the Philippines that Iron Man just says, "Screw this! I'm not going to go after Crimson Dynamo. I'm just going to save people." And it's got a whole montage of him saving people around the city. And then those two lovers for that interracial couple are reunited, and they're back together. And then that lady that he was protecting from Stark International is there, and they make a good Pepper makes a good comment that I thought was interesting, as she says, "You would never guess that you're Tony Stark, because when you're Tony Stark, you're so caring and stuff like that, and when you're Iron Man, you're so cold." Calculating. But that was Iron Man 73 from 1974, and he had a nose.
Yeah, that's pretty goofy. I do kind of vaguely, because I did read that Untold Story book, and I do vaguely remember something about Marvel's about Iron Man's nose, but I don't quite remember
What they said.
the anecdote, yeah.
I think who told me this? Was it Derek Coward or was it somebody else? It might have been Derek or Daryl. Somebody told me. And when they he said it, he said like it was a Stan Lee kind of we need to give him a more of a nose and make him look more human or something like that. So it looks odd on the cover. It looks really odd because you think an iron shell would not let you show expression,
Right.
but you can definitely see in this one that Iron Man's angry on the cover. Like his eyes move up, his mouth has a different shape, and he's got a nose. So he can
Yeah.
obviously form expressions like happiness, and his armor can show emotion, which is very weird.
Yeah, maybe that was all it was that Stan Lee wanted the nose, and whoever the artist was thought it was like the stupidest thing they've ever drawn or something.
Yeah.
Or left it off and then they put it on there other anyway or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah. I might have to listen to that, but then I'd have to fall behind on my podcasts. But I wouldn't mind buying the audio book and listening to it.
Yeah, you probably find it pretty interesting. If I recall, it was pretty interesting. Even if you think you know a lot, But I think it was pretty good. I read it pretty fast. That's why I think I retained as much as I might have, because I read it so quick. Because it was really interesting, but sometimes that results in me not remembering as much. Right. Well, I had picked up a bunch of number one issues, 'cause in my quest to be more like Bill Bomer. And
Is this at the con? 'Cause you just got back from a con too, right?
well, I just the local one. I went for a few hours last, not yesterday, but the Saturday before that.
Yeah.
But no, these I got these a little while ago. 50 cent, all in like a 50 cent bin. I had like a lot of 80s indie stuff. And I just think, to change things up for stuff that I talk about on the show and keep a variety going. I thought I sort of intentionally went looking for this type of stuff for retro. And I find it interesting because there was a lot of different indie stuff put out in the 80s, and a lot of it I haven't heard of, so I just kind of went with stuff that looked interesting, or there was a creator I'd heard of, or whatever. The first one is was put out by First Comics, called Dynamo Joe, and it's a limited series, one of three. This was interesting because, as it turns out, it had been published. It was one of those that had been published in an anthology prior to the series. So there's actually a whole lot of backstory. They do provide it because, like in the inside front cover, there's a long text piece that gives you all the stuff that had happened before. So I did go ahead and read that, even though that's not my ideal experience to start off like that. Not just like a little summary like Marvel or Valiant gives you, but just like a whole text page. But it was let's see, John. But one of the other things I thought was interesting was that it was scripted by John Ostrander, and then a guy named Doug Rice did the pencils, but he's also credited as a creator and the plotter, with inks by John Nyberg and Brian Thomas.
What company was this?
First,
Okay.
Dynamo Joe. So the basic backstory, as I understand it, is that it's a sci-fi series, and we've discovered other planets. There are Tavitans, who are cat-like creatures, and the Imperium, which is they're like super soldiers, they're the universe is being attacked by these creatures that sort of sound like the Borg to me, and that they just seem to be single-minded, like they're just cutting this path across the universe, and if a planet happens to be in their way, they attack it. And so the Terrans, or the Earth people, the humans, and the cat people, their planets are in the pathway, so they're particularly strongly engaged in defense, whereas the Imperium, the super soldiers, their planet isn't, so they have just kind of sent in this token force to, because they're supposed to be a part of an alliance with the other two.
So
So
this was number one, but it gave you like a summary of the Mars issues that it started off in, or what?
yeah,
Okay.
it says, "Welcome to the first issue of Dynamo Joe. Now, where were we?" And then
Okay.
it goes on to give you this like almost full text page, that recounts everything that had actually happened in whatever anthology series it had been in. So it's really not the beginning of the story. So, I mean, it does give you
One
enough information.
other interesting thing I want to bring up on this, because this is a write-up from Slings and Arrows
Oh, sure.
about this. It says it's got a well-conceived political backdrop to the ongoing conflict, and there's definitely a similarity to plots later used in Babylon 5. I just found that interesting.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't seen Babylon 5. I'd like to someday, but that's interesting. But yeah, I mean, it was kind of a slow starter because of having to read that background, and then it doesn't really start off with some of the main characters. But I did. It appears that in the original series, there was this kind of mech suit, a robot suit you see in the cover, that was piloted. There's always two people, and in this case, this Dynamo Joe was piloted by a human and one of the cat people, and they were a team together. And in this one, like in this issue, the cat guy gets promoted to full pilot, so he'd be like kind of have the role that the human had in the original pairing. But then he ends up running into as a part of the squad that he's in, the human that he had cooperated with. And so they're continuing to deal with this destructive race that's trying to fight its way across the universe. I liked it. I didn't like it a lot, but it was somewhat interesting. I mean, I think it was well put together, but I think the text page didn't really take the place of if I had read. I think I would have preferred to have experienced that story in comic book format, so I'd have been a little more familiar with the visuals that go along with it,
Yeah,
and it would have been
the originals were from Mars 10 through 12, but there's
okay.
a reprint. There's a Dynamo Joe special that was put out in 1987 in January, which was prior to this launch.
Okay.
So there's two
Yeah.
ways to find it.
So you don't always know what you're gonna get with the number one. That's part of the experiment, I guess. But
Yeah.
the other two I read were a little easier
To
to get
jump
into.
into.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my next one is The Shadow, number 8.
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah, how about that? So, the reason I read this one is because it was one of the two that I was missing from the original series, and I recently bought them at the comic shop. Really nice shape. Beautiful Frank Robbins art. Like, man, he does the shadow book really cool. I really dig the way he draws it. Plus, I'm a fan of the Marvel series called The Living Mummy that happened in Supernatural Thrillers. It was either Supernatural Tales or Supernatural Thrillers. And this has a mummy story in it. And it's by Danny O'Neill with art by Frank Robbins. And it's a really cool story because it takes place at like an this one's like a Mayan temple, so it's not like an Egyptian temple. And I wasn't aware, did the Mayans mummify? I thought the whole thing about the Mayan thing is they couldn't find any evidence of theirs, like they just disappeared. Do you know
Yeah,
much about that?
I don't. I mean, that sounds what you're saying sounds correct to me,
Yeah.
but I could be wrong. I might have to call Brian Reigate
Yeah, you
and
might have to make
get some
a
comics and
call
history in here.
comics and history in here, yeah. But
Phone a friend.
Margot Lane has always been like the Lois Lane of the Shadow, and she's in this, and she's working along with a professor. And that professor, Zane, is trying to find a sarcophagus, a mummy, inside of this Mayan temple. And they think they found it, but one of the assistants, McMasters, is being strangled by a mummy. And so they rush in there. The Shadow's not even supposed to be here because Langstrom or Lamont Cranston isn't even even in part of this expedition, but he shows up with his guns a-blazing and shoots a bunch of like Mayan warriors, and then gets to the mummy, and but the mummy disappears, and they actually hurt Margot Lane. Like one of the Aztecs actually, she's pretty good fighter on her own. She fights these guys. And eventually gets hurt, but the Shadow starts that crazy laugh. And I'm wondering if, like, I don't know a lot of his. I've been reading a lot of Creeper lately because of Campbell got me spun up on the Creeper. But the one thing that's interesting about the Shadow, he's got that crazy laugh. Like, if you're a villain and you start hearing that crazy laugh, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know you're gonna get killed. And the Shadow's got guns. He's gonna shoot you, or he's gonna punish you in a way that no one else will. He will kill you. Like, he does kill people by dropping them off of buildings and stuff like that. But
Right.
anyway, they take the mummy that's in here once they free that guy, and they put him on the plane because the professor demands it, even though they say no, we shouldn't take it. One of the guys actually shoots the mummy, and they're really upset with him because he says, "You murdered my friend," because one of the guys did die. But they get on this plane, they take him to the museum. Here's where you meet like a couple of the Shadow's men that work with the Shadow. Shervy is one of them. He's got the car ready for him. He has another agent that's kind of like a James Bond guy that works for him, and he has a lot of them. His name is Harry Vincent. And he's kind of like the guy that does all the work during the day and even at the night, because he runs into this these guys that are getting paid to like blow up cars and stuff like that to cause commotion and get the attention away from the mummy that's at the museum. So what we find out is it's kind of like a Scooby-Doo mystery, and the Shadow does use his ring in here. He runs into one of the gangsters, and he's like, the guy says, "Who are you?" And he says, "Men call me the Shadow, and I wish answers of you. Gaze into the fiery depths of my ring and speak. Say why you caused the destruction at the museum." And while he's under this trance, the guy tells him everything. So that the ring has the ability, it's like a lasso of truth. And it even had the ability, so when the guy's done, he like goes to the cops and he says, "Cop, cops, arrest me. This is what I did." So the Shadow has those kind of abilities. And this mummy seems like it's loose in the museum and actually hurts his friend, who's like that James Bond kind of guy. And it goes after the professor, Professor Zane. I originally, when I was reading this comic, I thought Professor Zane was the guy behind the killings. Like, it led me to believe that he was the guy, and it was falling into that Scooby-Doo paradigm where you get the hint, and yeah, it's the one guy that you thought it was. But it pulled a fast one on me, and it was another one of his associates that was trying to get credit for the discovery of this mummy. And the Shadow does kill this guy, but it's not because of he shot him. It's because this guy was impersonating the mummy. He kind of runs out of a window, crashes out onto a roof, and then falls off the building, and one of the mummy strands strangles him, so he hangs himself off of the gutter. And the Shadow
Jeez.
sees it and just starts laughing. So I found that fascinating. And then I got to the letters page, and I find these letters pages absolutely fascinating because things haven't changed. I mean, you have those fans that like that tell you the way that try to give you ideas on what you should be doing, and then you have the ones that are so anal retentive that they know everything about history and like say, "Hey, why is this happening? This is kind of out of character." But one of the suggestions was I can appreciate, but I wouldn't have wanted to see it. But he says, "Dear editor, my father listened to the sh I like this because there's a sense of legacy, like the father passing on to the son. Well, this is what the Shadow was like in my day. This is why I absolutely love it." But he's like, "My father listened to the Shadow radio show when he was a kid. He said that the best thing about the Shadow, about the show, was that the fact that you could use your imagination while listening to the plot unravel. He says, I have a suggestion. How about setting aside in each book a page for a written story along with the comic story? In this manner, the reader can use his imagination to picture an adventure of the shadow. So what he was asking for is throw some prose in there instead of show the comic. And the editor
Interesting.
was like, interesting idea. He says, if we did that, though, we'd either have to take out the letters page or cut one page from the illustrated short story. He says, I don't know. What do you say, fans? So, yeah, that was an interesting one.
And what year was that from?
1974/75, so it must have crossed, and it was probably bi-monthly if they did that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So who was doing the shadow then, did you say?
Dennis O'Neill.
Oh, so it was the DC.
Yeah, DC.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
Yes, it
Yeah,
was
that's funny.
cool, of
That's funny
course.
that that fit in
Yeah, and I
with the
wanted to
question.
like talk about some of the other letters, but I kind of just summed them up, but it's very interesting because there's this one guy who's so knowledgeable. Like you could tell that he read the pulp novels, that he like knows this. He did the radio show. He like knows the character in and out. And he says, "You did fantastic in issues 1 through 5, and then in issue 6, you threw it all out the window. Like you, this would not be a shadow comic because of this. You know, it's kind of fascinating."
It's not my shadow.
Yeah, it's not my shadow.
It is fun to read the letter pages because it's interesting when fans had to actually know how to write a letter,
Yeah.
use complete sentences and articulate their thoughts instead of just, shouting on Twitter and, with grammar and spelling all over the place,
Yeah,
or
and
if
yet.
they would at least fix it to print it.
The other interesting thing I want to point out is there was another letter that said in your recent Tarzan Giant Collector's Edition, you stated that the shadow was Kent Allard, alias Lamont Cranston. And he says, in your comic, you said that the shadow poses as a Lamont Cranston, but that it is not his real name. And he's like, please give us your real name, please. So it's like, I've always known the Shadow to be Lamont Cranston, but the way they wrote this series is that the Shadow's alias is Lamont Cranston. So that's fascinating. That's like the inverse. You know, that's not like Bruce Wayne becoming Batman. That's like Batman becoming Bruce Wayne. Yeah, that's kind of cool. So like, yeah, this book was fascinating from a lot of different perspectives.
Sounds
I
like
was a good
hopefully
reader.
that guy got his answer. Sounds like he was pretty distraught there, really messing with that dude.
He got the normal editor answer. Stay tuned and see.
Nice. Well, for my next one, I'm going to talk about Dinosaur Rex from Upshot Graphics, which I'd never heard of, but I think might have a connection to Fantagraphics because there's a bunch of ads for Fantagraphics stuff in here. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't
I had
know. I haven't
never heard
heard
of
of the
Upshot
other one either
Graphics.
that you had.
Yeah. Well,
Dynamo Joe. I
first
have heard of
comics, of course,
Mars,
was.
but not Dynamo Joe.
Yeah. I mean, company-wise, like you'd heard of First Comics,
Oh
obviously, but
yeah. That's
have you
John
heard of
Sable.
Upshot Graphics, though?
No, I have not. You had posted something on Facebook where you said I bought all these independents, and the only one that you had bought that I think that was it, that I even had an issue of was Aztec Ace, and there maybe there was one other, but other than that, I never even heard of any of these.
Yeah, that's my last one today is Aztec Ace. But first I'll talk about Dinosaur Rex, which has a cover with a guy and a girl in safari clothes. The guy's holding a gun, and then he's got a lizard man. So I guess I'm reading comics with like animal people in them this week. Catman, this got a lizard man, and it's got a the woman is like sitting on the desk looking like safari is going on safari is the sexiest thing you can do. But this actually has two stories in it. The first one is Dinosaur Rex, and it's got backup. Dinosaur Rex is by Jan Strand or S Sternad Stranad. How do you say that? Henry Mayo is the artist. But this is kind of a fun story. The art's got a little bit of a cartoony feel to it, and the narration is by the main character. It's this blonde British guy, and he's kind of like a spoiled. He's kind of spoiled. He's used to basically living off of an allowance from his aunt and uncle. And the last couple months he hasn't received his allowance. And then his Aunt Celia summoned him, and so he's going there just to give you an idea of the sort of his sort of narrations. This I prepared a short lecture on the subject, opening with a pithy comment about the difficulty of mending convertible tops when a chap's allowance checks are suddenly disappearing like corpses in a murder mystery. So, he goes and he finds out from his Aunt Cecilia that she's completely broke, like, not just a little short on cash, but she's bankrupt because her husband, his uncle, has been gone and for a long time, doesn't know where he's at. He's like an explorer, and hunter and that kind of thing. Like kind of fits into the whole pulp thing, and normally he would send back money of like and treasures and things that he would find, and that's how they had so much money in the first place. So basically, like he's out of luck unless they can find his uncle, and so. But he doesn't have any money to found an expedition to find his uncle in the first place, so he goes to the track, and that's where he meets up with his cousin, who also is kind of in a similar situation. She's used to living off this money also, so she doesn't have any money either, and so she's kind of interested in him succeeding. So his whole idea, he's gonna bet at the track, but you get an idea that things are maybe a little bit different in this world because they're not betting on horses, they're betting on these like raptor looking dinosaurs. And
This cover is gorgeous, though. Number one. Is this what you're talking about?
yeah, probably.
Holy crap. It looks like a Dave Stevens woman on the cover.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool art.
That is sexy to me. That's like.
That's why I say it. She's like on the desk, like safaris are the sexiest thing you've ever done.
But the thing that's amazing, it looks like Dave Steve. Like, I'm trying to find the artist on it, on the cover. Is it the same artist as in the interior?
Yeah.
Really?
Henry Mayo, yeah.
I'm really interested in. Oh, it does say Mayo on the cover. This guy's
Yeah,
art is
very stylized, but
great. Like,
yeah, so that's the main
issue
character.
two's
That's
cover doesn't look that great, but issue three's is another great cover.
his
Wow. Hey, can you
that's
do
his
me a fa
cousin.
can you do me a favor after you're done with this, after we're done recording, and just take a picture of some of the interiors and just send them to my phone? I
Yeah,
just want to
sure.
see what I want to see if the I want to see what the interiors look like compared to the cover art.
Sure.
Is it black and white?
No, it's color.
Okay, that's interesting because the other issues are listed as black and white.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Sorry about that, but
Oh, that's
I
okay.
actually bought it up on my database and I was like, "Damn, that's gorgeous." That is sexy right there, man. That safari desk, I'm like, "Oh my God, Daryl would love that."
So yeah, the girl on the cover, that's his cousin. And she's, and when they meet, she's dressed in like a long black dress with a fur collar, and she's got one of those like 50s style headbands on, kind of like she's from money, and but she while they're at the track, they spot his uncle's manservant Dubada, and that's actually the reptile dude that's on the cover. So they meet up with Dubada, and Dubada actually is the one that comes up with this plot. And without going into a lot of detail, they basically like have this whole plot that they set up, that they sort of scam this guy into betting against them, knowing that if it happens that there's a thunderstorm, this particular raptor that would normally win will freak out and not be able to finish the race. And so they set all that up, and that's like their plan, basically, to make the money that they can found the expedition to go find his uncle. So that the story doesn't get into them going on the safari yet. There's like a page in the beginning and a page at the end that are like kind of that show you like the future, but most of it's just about them like raising the money to do it.
Is
But
it
it was entertaining.
is the dialogue all weird? 'Cause you read like a sample of the dialogue. Is it all like that?
It's just written kind of like I'm not sure exact era, maybe like it's like early 20th century England.
Yeah. And it's written like that?
Kind of, yeah.
All of it, even the captions, or
Well, what I read was the cat was his he's the narrator, that was his
oh, the
captions.
narrator. Okay.
But like the dialogue's kind of like damn, I was hoping for the long odds. I'll never get anywhere on 6 to 5. Oh, Aunt Celia told you then about the family fortune. Yes, and if I don't find Uncle Grenville in Africa and persuade him to send home the wealth he squeezed from the natives, I can kiss my monthly allowance goodbye. And mine as well. So,
Yeah, I
but yeah,
really
I
am interested
enjoyed
in
it.
the interiors in this because the cover is amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty similar. I mean, it's not as heavily inked, like
Yeah.
the outlines on the cover
The
are really thick.
detail on the cover is amazing.
Yeah, it's
He
not quite
draws
as
her feet,
densely
he draws
detailed.
her thighs, or the curves on the jungle suit are pretty cool. I just dig it.
But yeah, it's pretty good though. The interiors are pretty similar.
Yeah. Did you
But
read the
there's not.
backup?
Yeah, so the backup was fairly different, but it was also pretty good. And this actually is written by William Messner Loebs, who obviously we've heard of, whereas the artist I have not heard of, Dennis Fujitaki. But it's called The Dragons of Summer, and it's very different. It's like it's more cartoony, but it's it tells you at the top that it's takes place so 200 years ago, mankind made the leap to the stars, and achieved space travel. And then 50 years ago, they came back from the stars, changed and broken. And so it follows this kind of like middle-aged looking guy, receding hairline, glasses, mustache, sort of middle management kind of guy. And he goes into his job at this office that's just like a real crowded office. at the organization of Ombudsman Services, and basically what their job is to help humans that are coming back from space reintegrate into society. So basically, like, mankind's journey to the stars was a disaster, and most people that traveled to the stars came back mutated or with problems. So, like, there's a lot of what they call aliens on Earth, but the aliens are just humans that left and came back altered. And so, like, there's this guy that comes into the office, a real huge guy, and he's got six arms. And it's kind of funny because it's like definitely like leans towards humor. His problem is that, you know, the insurance company won't they only want to give him three one third of the money for like workers' comp for his hands getting burnt because he only burned two out of his six hands. He said, but you know, it's not fair because his whole body is out of work, you know. It's not like four of his hands are still working. So we see how this guy that works there is good at dealing with people and how he gets the guy to like calm down, and you know, he's like good at his job. And but it was entertaining. It's a neat idea. Like the concept itself, I think, is really interesting. Like that, you know, space travel turned out to be a bust, and now they have to deal with what it did to people. But the setting is kind of interesting. That it's just like the sort of humor strip. So it's shorter than the first story. It's maybe like six pages or something. But it was a decent backup story.
Cool. So you like this one a lot more than the other one.
Yeah, I mean, well, I would say like Dynamo Joe is a 3 out of 5, and this is maybe a 4 out of 5, maybe.
Okay. I looked up this guy on my database, and he doesn't have the Mayo guy.
Henry
Is
Mayo, yeah.
yeah, he doesn't have a lot of stuff, but he does
Yeah.
have an interesting one where Dave Stevens drew the cover on one that he did like in an anthology.
Oh, okay.
So I'm a huge Dave Stevens fan, and I the way he drew that woman there looks very Dave Stevens to me. But he
Yeah.
doesn't have a lot of work done, so like he might be one of those artists that tried his way in the field and didn't find it. You know,
Right.
like he didn't have the success and said, "Well, I can't make money like this, so I need to do something else."
Yeah, I don't know if it's the same guy, but there's a Hank Mayo that says is AKA Henry Mayo, and he's done tons of storyboards and concept designs for movies.
Oh,
So I
really?
mean, it could be the same art. It could be the
Yeah, it
same
could be the
guy, you
same
know.
guy, and he's like, I can make more money doing this. Why am I
Yeah,
doing
you
comic
know,
books?
went into storyboarding instead of, because as recent as like a couple of years ago, he's got credits on storyboarding, but it does go back to the 80s. So, you know, he might have just moved into storyboarding and stuff. So,
Yeah.
working in art departments on movies.
Right.
So.
All right, so my last book of the week was Werewolf by Night number 32. This is the first appearance of Moon Knight, and I read some, like I have some early Werewolf by Nights, like his first appearance in a couple of them, and I've read them. And the thing that I noticed in this later issue is, he's like totally lost control. He seemed to have like a heroic aspect to him, you know, Jack Russell, which is kind of a weird alias for a guy who turns into a werewolf because you got the Jack Russell Terrier. But he seems to have lost control. Like it starts off really interesting because Moon Knight's kicking the crap out of Werewolf by Night. And he has all these weapons, and they're all made out of silver. So every time he's hitting the werewolf, he's really hurting him pretty doggone bad. And then it flashes back to, okay, in the Bronze Age they do that a lot. DC and Marvel, they jump you into the action. It might have been a strategy for a kid, like, let's get them into the comic and then we'll tell them how they got there, because then they'll be dropped right into the action and be sucked in. You're dropped into the fight scene and then you see how you got there, and it's really an unusual thing because, from what I can tell, and I almost want to read issue 31 to see what happened, is they were like at a ski resort, and there was like a blizzard going on, and the full moon happened, and Jack turned into the werewolf, and he actually went after a little girl, and his best friend Buck Cohen actually stopped him from hurting the girl, and he the werewolf cut him up really, really bad, and this is his best friend, so it kind of shows you that the full moon made him lose total control. Like, he had no control when he was a werewolf. A matter of fact, he goes to the emergency room, he almost dies, his sister's there, another girl's there, and then you realize that his father or stepfather knows he's a werewolf and does everything that he can to protect him. And he feels like terrible because he actually knows he hurt his one of his best friends, and he's in a coma. And he's like, holy crap, there's another full moon coming out tonight. I need to get the hell out of here. And as he's going away, and he goes to his father's house, the Moon Knight's there, and he says, hey, I'm the Moon Knight, and I've been told to bring you in alive, but I will bring you in dead. And it's interesting because Mark Spector, I never, never, ever realized that he didn't like create the Moon Knight. He did not. I always thought he was a mercenary, and he created the alias Moon Knight to go out at night as a vigilante. But it was a corporation that knew he was a mercenary and paid him and said, here's your costume. I need you to go after Werewolf by Night. And that's absolutely fascinating to me because I didn't know that. Like, I always thought it was he donned the costume on his own, not a corporation telling him, hey, here's the suit, here's the weapons, we need you to go after this werewolf. So I absolutely thought that was fascinating because they paid him and they said, you're going to bring the werewolf to us. And he also had Frenchie there too. So, like, Frenchie is his Alfred. He drops him out of a helicopter to go after Werewolf by Night. They have this incredible fight scene. Frenchie was then later tasked to bring in his sister and the other girl at gunpoint. And then that's kind of how it ends, is Frenchie gets the two girls, and Moon Knight's dragging Werewolf by Night's body into the helicopter, taking him to the corporation. But a really cool story. The part that really sucked me in was the fact that, he didn't make his own alias, this corporation did. So, like, I want to read more about that. I want to read why this corporation wants Jack Russell captured, and that kind of stuff. That's the part that hooked me. But it was a really good issue.
Yeah, sounds interesting. Did you read that in the single issue or?
I have the single issue, but I read it in the Epic Collection.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna say I thought they had put out a Epic Collection or two.
Plus, I have it in three forms. I have the original issue. I have two copies of the original issue. I have one in like fine condition and one in like VG. And then I have the Werewolf by Night Omnibus. I have the Werewolf by Night Essential and the Moon Knight Essential. So I have it in there. And I
You have
have
it
it
like
in the Epic. Yeah, five places.
five ways. You should just like lay them all out in front of you together.
Yeah.
Read one panel from each.
Compare them. Yeah, compare them
Yeah.
side by side. Which one is the best? I'll tell you right now, it's the comic. The paper, the paper and the stuff, it's just the best
Yeah.
experience.
Anybody knows you wouldn't guess that would be your answer.
Yeah. But as far as like reading the surprisingly the black and white looks really good. Like for Werewolf and like Tomb of Dracula and stuff, I almost prefer the black and white. And then the omnibus has its own advantage, but it's like really big and hard to carry. And the Epic is like the best like reading experience, I think, if you want it in color. So they all have
Yeah, the
their
epics are cool.
pros and cons. A matter of fact, I finished that Thor collection that you had covered and I had covered. And well, I have two more issues read. So I have 399 and an issue 400 to read, but this was the DeFalco and Franz run of Thor, and I'm actually loving it. Like I think the experience I'm getting out of that is really awesome. And one of the rabbit holes I might go down is Thor, because I have the opportunity to buy the first issue of Thor, which is not really Journey into Mystery, but it's the first issue of Thor when it took over from Journey of into Mystery,
Yeah,
which
gotcha.
I think I'm going to buy, which has Hercules and Thor on the cover.
Oh, okay.
That might be one
Nice.
of my next purchases, but this is I've been buying a lot of Marvel just because the opportunity. There's one guy that's like selling his entire collection to Ed in spurts. Like he says, okay, here's the
Okay.
Iron Man, here's this. And because the opportunity's there and because of the discounts I'm getting, it's really beneficial to me to buy them.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to take the opportunity when it's there, when you're a collector, you know. Just like when I went to the Comic Con locally last weekend, you know, I wasn't really planning on spending money, but there was a whole bunch of Volume 1 Wonder Woman issues there for cheaper than I know I'll probably ever see them again. So I just kind of had to grab them while I had the chance.
Were they towards the later end or were they in the 12 cents?
They are towards the later end. I mean,
Okay.
they're normally, like, you probably go like for $5 or $6
Yeah.
a piece is what I usually see them at, and they were $3 each and really good condition, so.
Nice.
All right, so I already mentioned what my last book is, which is Aztec Ace from Eclipse Comics, and I noted that Doug Munch was the writer. His name's on the cover. He's also credited as the creator.
Also the creator of Moon Knight.
All right, yeah.
So
There you go.
the issue that I mean that's weird is we have all these weird connections. But
Yeah, and it happens a lot
the
too.
issue that I read was Doug Munch and the artist was Don Perlin. I forgot to mention the team.
Gotcha. The artist on this is Michael Hernandez. I don't know if I've heard of him, but I have heard of the inker Nestor Redondo.
Yeah, I've heard of Nestor.
And the letterer is actually Adam Kubert.
That's interesting. But I
Yeah.
can see it because their father was a completist. Like in his school, he wanted to teach everything. And
Yeah, and
he wanted his kids to know every single aspect of it, you know?
yeah. Something funny I just noticed, you know, how they have the indicia where it tells you the volume and the address and distinct license, the copyright information and all that, you know. It actually has the wrong it has the DNA Agents Volume 1 Number 9
Oh, wow, that's weird.
instead of Aztec Ace Volume 1 Number 1.
And see, that's a run that I really followed, the DNA agents. I think I followed most of their popular, like their more popular properties, but some of these other ones I was just in and out of. Or I tried one issue and didn't like it or something.
Yeah, this This actually has an ad for DNA agents in the back of it, along with Eclipse Monthly and Zot by
Yeah.
Scott McCloud. But anyways, yeah, I mean, this is probably not something that I would have picked up and gotten into when I was a kid myself, but
I did. It was one of the first indies I picked up at Don's Paperback Book Exchange.
nice. Yeah, I liked it as an adult though. I mean, it was $2.25. It's a 52-page first issue, but it's kind of neat because it starts off, you think it takes place in the 1500s in the Aztec and Montezuma, but then pretty quickly you realize something else is going on, because the man that you're following, he goes into this Aztec pyramid and comes out with a bag of Fritos for a snack.
What
Whoa.
was that?
Mabel, she's like, she went flying down the stairs. Is she okay?
I heard the
She went.
nails or, the dog nails on the floor or something.
Yeah. She went flying down the stairs and I think like slid on the rug at the bottom or something. She's probably fine.
Wow.
Crazy town.
There was no
So
yelping, so I think everything's fine.
yeah, she's probably fine. It's just like, geez, we're going crazy. So anyways, he goes in this pyramid and like there's this woman bathing with like two other topless women attending to her. And young Mike was like, "Whoa, I bought the right comic."
I didn't buy that issue. I bought number two. It's the only one I own.
Okay. We missed out then.
I think if I would have bought that issue, I would have continued.
Yeah, probably.
Well,
And maybe been disappointed because it sounds like issue two, it didn't really have any
back then
topless
I
women.
was in middle school, so
Yeah.
it's 1984. No, I wasn't. I was in high school already.
Jeez. But so anyways, this woman that's bathing, there's this woman named Bridget. He's talking to her, and then he goes into this room, and there's all this technology and computers and stuff, and you realize, okay, something else is going on, and he calls it his Anachrony Den, like short for anachronisms, because he's got stuff from all time eras and stuff. And he starts listening to, he's got a jukebox in there, and he starts listening to some oldies, what we call oldies. It's like he's got a keep away from a run around to a city. Hey, whoa, hey. He's listening to that.
Yeah.
And
That's a good song.
yeah, I used to let, one of my first car, didn't all I had
Isn't
was a
that I'm a
radio.
Wanderer? I'm a Wanderer.
That's a different song,
Oh,
I
that's a
think.
different song.
Yeah, similar.
Away from a wanderer.
Yeah. But so he's got this computer called Tempest Fugit, and there's like a head, like a guy's head that comes out of it. He's like, I think he's like a computer. But eventually you get to realize that this guy is a time traveler. And I don't know, maybe why this didn't, because it actually reminded me of Doctor Who in some ways, so that might be why you didn't like it.
That might have been why I jumped right off.
Yeah. But it does, one of the periods he goes back to, or one of the main periods that it talks about is like a 40s private eye kind of. But it does kind of jump around where he goes, talks about in San Francisco there was this statue of a snake, and it tells you some of the story. And that goes back to the Aztec era, and they witness human sacrifice. And Bridget, the woman that's with him, is not as upset by it, but he explains to her, this is their culture, like we can't interfere. with the natural order of things, but he's trying to protect time from being messed with too much. And there's a we don't actually see this other individual, but there's another individual that he calls Croc. I think it's short for crocodile, that he's trying to keep from messing with time. You know, Croc likes to mess with time and try to screw things up, and he's trying to prevent that from happening. And the connection to the 40s is the statue, and that's how he met this Bridget woman in the first place. She was an antique dealer, and he asks her to hold on to it, but she's involved with her boyfriend's like a criminal kind of guy. And he finds out that she's got something valuable and wants to take it from her. So it gets kind of convoluted in terms of the time travel stuff, and not convoluted in that I didn't have any trouble following it, but I won't go at and explaining it at length, but it's one of those kind of situations where they have to go they have to go into time like a few minutes earlier and do something that we've already seen happen in the earlier part of the story, but we didn't know who was responsible for it. But it turns out to be them, just at a different time in the timeline. And it's also that they can get the statue back, and it can be given to the Aztecs for their, because it represents the god to them. And if they don't have the statue, then they think that their god is not pleased with them, and then it may like have a butterfly effect kind of thing, where they'll be more cautious and wary and prepared for the Europeans when they come to invade, and it could affect all of history. But it has a pretty cool, like, surprising ending, where he witnesses Ben Franklin. He wants to know if, like, earlier he was talking about Ben Franklin, how Ben Franklin, you know, flew the kite and discovered electricity, and that's like one of his examples as something that you can't mess with, that's important to the flow of time. You can maybe change like small events here and there, but there's important events that you can't mess with. And so he goes to witness this happening, and he thinks, you know, he sees him discover electricity, and so he feels reassured that everything's okay. So he goes back to the Aztec era, where Bridget is still waiting for him. And he goes into like the pool, where at the beginning of the issue we saw her bathing with the two topless Aztec women that were like attending to her. And he goes in there, and what he sees actually is both of those Aztec women floating dead in the pool, and a naked Ben Franklin with a futuristic weapon in his hand.
Ha
And the funny thing is, like, he's naked, so he says, "Some call me Big Ben." And he says, "And when in the course of human events it becomes necessary to electrify, well, then someone's got to die." So it's a pretty surprising ending. And yeah, so it's a long story. There's a lot of going back and forth in time, and if that's not your kind of thing, I don't think you'd like it. But it was well told, and it is. I didn't find it hard to follow, though. So
Yeah.
I really liked it, and I'm kind of interested to find out what happened. I think I don't know. I think I looked up. I think there was only like about 13 issues of the series or so, but that's about all I know about it, other than that.
Cool beans. Well, do
The
you have
people
any
wait for the runaround
around
suit.
Sue? Yeah, that's what I was gonna
He
title
listens
the
to
episode.
some other songs like from that same era too. I'm trying to see where they're at. But yeah, it's kind of funny how he's like, "I'm gonna take my vitamins," and he's talking about how the numbers on a jukebox sound like vitamins, like B12, C8,
Ah,
D7.
nice.
He's comparing it to vitamins. Oh, he listens to, "Oh, won't you stay just a little
A
bit
bit longer.
longer?" He listens to that one. It's funny how they have the actual lyrics in here.
Yeah.
And oh yeah, and My Little Runaway. I'm a walking in the rain.
Rain.
Tears are falling and I feel a
So we
pain.
know that Doug has some good musical tastes.
Yeah. So he was listening to the 50s.
Yeah.
But yeah, my first car only had a radio in it, so I used to just listen to the oldies station all the time, and
Yeah.
so I memorized all those songs.
I grew up with the oldies, listening with the radio with my parents, but then I went like really retro in college because I found current music, even though I liked it, I couldn't study to. But I could study to 50s and 60s, so it was weird.
Interesting.
All right.
Whatever works.
Yeah. Well, they can, is that it, or do you have anything else you want to add?
No, I think that's about it.
All right. This has been episode 75. Leave an iTunes review under Geek Brunch Podcast. You can reach Chris at MythMakingETC, and his email is MythMakingETC@gmail.com. And MythMakingETC hosts Comic Book Booster Club, and also From Kid to Flash. So check that out.
Look at
And
that. I can't hire you as my publicist.
I'm at Mike Myers Brunch, and my email is mike@comicbooknoise.com. And thank you for all the questions. We had a lot of cool questions that we took a while to discuss, so we
Yeah.
appreciate that.
And check out regular Geek Brunch and Mike M's Weekly Reads and DC Noise and DC Weekly Reads and Gotham by Geeks.
There, I think you got it all.
That's pretty much all the current ones at least.
Yeah.
And your Comic M on the forums.
That's right. At the Forum for Geeks.
Yeah. Steal Keith's joke.
Yeah. We recorded DC Noise last night, episode 300, so check that
Nice.
out. It's a show
Yeah.
about nothing. It's a show about everything and at the same time about nothing.
Yeah. Show about life.
Yeah.
Life in general. It used to be a show about DC Comics.
Well, DC Weekly Reads is there now. And I
Yeah.
think that appeases both fans because they're the fans that felt the show went off the rails. And then there are the fans that don't want anything. They want to hear us talk, just like we normally
Right.
talk.
Yeah, they came along and
Yeah.
it's been a while really since that it's been kind of how it is now.
Yeah.
100 episodes or more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really.
It's pretty soon. It's almost like 10 episodes after Daryl arrived, I think.
Yep.
If I had to put it in the timeline. But
Yeah, 'cause I started listening right around the time that Daryl started joining the show.
yeah, but it's had a long history. It started with Comic Geek Speak, Peter Rios. He did the first three episodes. And then he quit. So he like bailed on it really early. And then Eric, who's passed away since then, we met at Heroes Con and he was like, "Mike, we really need, I know you're a big DC fan." So he's the real reason that DC Noise exists, because he was like, "We need to make a DC podcast." And at the time there was Raging Bullets, but he was like, "I want to do our own for the Comic Book Noise network." And I was like,
Nice.
"Okay, that sounds good." And then it was about comics and we kept it that way. And then he passed away and then I quit. Like I didn't know if I wanted to do the show anymore. And I decided to, and then I knew that at the time Keith was reading a lot of DC comics, and like he doesn't read any now. But I was like, man, we got a lot in common. I'm gonna ask him to do it with me, and then he's been on since. And we had Daryl on as a guest, And I had already knew Daryl from other podcasts and such, and then he kind of just started showing up. He showed up the two episodes, and then I was like, wow, our chemistry is really good. Like, it felt natural, and that's when I like the podcast like this, where it's just like natural conversation. It's not really like a show, you know? Yeah, we have a little bit of an agenda, but it's more like us just talking. And I was like, wow, that's natural. You should come on. And then it evolved into something else. And it's been that way ever since.
Yeah, I've gone back and sampled some of the old episodes just with you and Eric and with you and Keith just to hear what it was like, you know. I've listened to that first episode that you and Eric did. I think I've listened to most of it a couple times because a couple times I've thought I'm just gonna start from that episode and go forward, and then like the project like peters off, and so I'm like I'm gonna do that again, or I'm gonna try that again, and so,
That's a lot
but
of
it's
episodes.
cool, yeah.
All right.
All right.
So we will talk hopefully in 2 weeks. I
Yep.
hope. I have one more trip coming up. I think it's for a while, but not for a
Yeah.
while, but I think in October sometime towards the end we have a trip, and then I'm done until Thanksgiving and then Christmas.
Yeah, there's a
But
weekend in October that we'll be away, but yeah, we'll
yes,
work it out. See how it goes.
it's been weird. Like at work, I've been taking these vacations, right? So you'd think I'd be using up my hours, but I've been working so many hours that even though I take 2 days off in the week, I almost make 40 in 3 days. So it's been like I haven't been using my vacation, so
Yeah.
just little bits, you know, here's 5 hours or something like that instead of like full days. So
Right.
it's been kind of, I have a lot of vacation now.
Yeah, gotta use it.
Yeah. Well, it's not use or lose.
Oh, that's
I
good.
can have up to 400 hours before I start to not accumulate it anymore.
Yeah. Well, you need to take time off if you can.
Yeah. All right, well, take care, my brother, and you have a good
Okay.
Sunday. The Bills don't look that good this year.
No, what else is new?
I've watched them, and I'm really struggling with them this year, especially even more than last year, as having an identity. Like, they just seem, they don't, I don't know. Usually they have, like, the Bills have a distinctive identity, and I don't know how to describe it. This year, I don't feel it at all. Like, Harley must have got bit on her nose or something. She's like pawing at her nose. What did you do, Harley? Did you get bit? All right, I have to check her out. I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye.
Hope she's okay. All right. Bye.